Welcome to the Times of Israel's daily briefing. Today is Monday, April 15th, day 192 of the war with Hamas. Amanda Borchel-Dan here with our diplomatic correspondent, Laser Behrman from Chicago. Thanks for joining me.
Happy to be here, both in Chicago and on the podcast.
We will dig into the regional and international cooperation that aided Israel to thwart the some 300 missiles and unmanned aerial vehicles that Iran launched at the Jewish state late Saturday night. Is this a turning point for the war playing out along global axes? We will also learn about what we know of Israel's plans to strike back and whether world powers will give them backing. All this and much more when we're back.
The Technion Israel Institute of Technology is where some of Israel's brightest minds ask the biggest question of all. What if? What if they could take on the world's biggest challenges? What if they could develop life-changing environmental, scientific, health, medical, and technological discoveries that will make a huge impact on Israel and the planet? But they don't just ask the question, they answer it too. They turn those ideas into reality. They make them happen. To see just some of the incredible things they've achieved, get the Technion Booklet of Wonders at ats.org/wonders. We hope it inspires you to give them your support so they can keep doing what they do best. The American Technion Society. World-changing discoveries by Israel's brightest minds, made possible by you.
Laser, I know I'm catching you at a very late hour in the United States. It's pretty early here in Israel. So how has the American media depicted the foiled Iran strike so far?
So from what I've seen, it has been leading newspapers above the fold. If you look on newsstands and the like, headlines like Iran attacks Israel, recognition that this is a potential for a serious escalation, that this is a dramatic event, but also recognition that the vast majority were thwarted and there was this surprising coalition that came together in a stunningly effective fashion to foil it. I think the bottom line here is that the narrative around Israel and the war in Gaza has been thoroughly transformed, at least for the time being.
Okay, you wrote an analysis following the strike that just included such a great quote that I'm going to read it out here. Iran officially inaugurated the regional defense coalition that has been under works for the last decade. That was said by Israeli military theorist Brigadier General Eran Ortal. And obviously, there's no doubt that the United States and regional Israeli allies played a massive role in stopping the drones and missiles from reaching Israel's airspace. We've discussed in the past the inclusion of Israel into CENTCOM, which it's been part of since, I think, January 2021. Is this what maybe turned the tide? The Israeli strike was such a cooperative team event in stopping all of these missiles from reaching Israel's airspace.
So the move toward creating this regional architecture started well before Israel was in CENTCOM. A former head of Israel's air defense array, he was speaking to Israeli media, and he said that this actually started for him, I think it was 7 years ago. He got a call from the then chief of staff, Gadi Eisenkot, who told him that the next morning the head of the Central Command would be coming into Israel and to have a PowerPoint ready for him at 9 o'clock talking about regional air defense. And the head of Israel's air defense basically said, there's no such thing as regional air defense. It doesn't exist yet. But that was basically the start of the idea. And from then, it took off. There was also other talk. There was talk about bringing Jordan, I believe it was in Netanyahu's first term as prime minister, about bringing them into the umbrella of the Arrow, of the early Arrow system. So there's been talk about it, and there's certainly been a recognition that Iran is the threat against which the regional actors have to coordinate. But this all took This all gained a lot of momentum in recent years. Certainly with the Abraham Accords, it became much easier to cooperate. And bringing Israel into CENTCOM made it much easier, again, to share intelligence and to do exercises together. But there's no question that this was an impressively coordinated event. And this is something that happens only after years of coordination. And it's not only the technology that's coordinated. It also has to be the individuals, that these people know each other, that they've been together in exercises and conferences, and they trust each other. And think of how complex it is to be able to divide airspace amongst different countries, amongst different capabilities, all as the missiles are flying. And to do it so successfully is absolutely an impressive achievement, and one that shows how much this paid off over the years. A lot of investment went into it, and the fact that this was only been able to be displayed now means there was a lot of trust that it would have to be used at some point, and the investment was made over the years, and it finally paid off.
So CENTCOM itself is under the auspices of the United States, but it's also a network of satellite planes and radars on the ground and at sea, all these different countries pulling together in order to share information, as you said. Was Israel in charge of thwarting the drone and the missile attack, or was this more of a CENTCOM operation?
CENTCOM is the U.S. military regional command. Okay, so it's a U.S. military command. It is made up of only U.S. military units. Now, there are regional players, including Israel, who fall under the U.S. Regional, the way that they split up the world, and the countries that cooperate with the U.S. kind of fall under this umbrella. There's no question that because of the geography of it, it certainly helps to have countries like Saudi Arabia, UAE, Jordan, and be allowed to use not only the airspace, but also their radars. A lot of this was U.S. ships. So whether they're in the Persian Gulf, whether they're in other places, the Eastern Mediterranean, you tie that all together in combination with the satellites and also with Israeli capabilities, that becomes a much more robust network.
Laser, you mentioned Saudi Arabia, and we've heard that our neighboring countries, the Arab countries, played greater and lesser roles as well. And obviously Jordan, everyone's talking about Jordan, but also perhaps Saudi Arabia shot down some Iranian drones in this strike from Iran. And yesterday, an unnamed official from the Saudi royal family told the Khan public broadcaster that any suspicious object that enters the Saudi Arabian airspace is intercepted. But the Saudis have no great love for Iran as well, it seems. And so do you think that this is another stronger tie that could be spinning the world on its axis slightly differently following this strike?
So I don't think it's necessarily following the strike, because it's not only that there's no love lost between Saudi and Iran. Saudi Arabia's big enemy, perhaps even more than us, is Iran, right? And they have already come under drone and missile attacks from Iran, whether it's being fired by the Houthis in Yemen, by Iran itself. They have dealt with this, and they have seen the weakness of their own air defenses. The fact that these drones and rockets were able to strike the Aramco facilities in 2019, temporarily knock out half of Saudi's oil production, is just another indication of how much of a threat this is to them, perhaps even more than it is to Israel. So there's no question that the Saudis are in this. They understand that this is to their benefit, and they don't need an incident like this to remind them which side they're on. But it certainly doesn't hurt. And it also reminds the world that this is the same Iran that is behind the capabilities that Russia is using in Ukraine. So this is not only a Middle Eastern thing. This is much broader than that. And the same type of tactics that were used to try to get through the Israel/regional air defenses, which is slower moving drones and different types of missiles and then some much faster ballistic missile, is exactly what Russia has been using to break through weaker Ukrainian air defenses. So this is something that the Russians are learning. They're passing on to the Iranians. The Iranians are learning it here. They're passing it back on to the Russians. From Bucha to Be'eri, Iran is behind all of this. just a sense of the scale of this attack. This attack was on par with the biggest Russian attacks, even when it was kind of the shock and awe part of the Russian attacks in Ukraine. It was also, you're talking about 200 ballistic and other missiles total, and that's about the same scale here. So this is really one of the biggest missile attacks that we've seen in recent history.
We'll go to a short break.
I got married this Monday in the middle of a war.
You are not a soldier anymore. You are 50 years old. What is the matter with you?
It's like a couple of kilometers from here. Like, my friend has a 4x4. Let's just go cut across the fields and go get him.
Israel Stories, Wartime Diaries. Voices that try to capture slivers of life right now.
And he told me, take with you a sleeping bag and a tent and just go.
I texted him on, like, after I was told that he was killed.
From their eyes, I was a traitor.
Everybody needs their, like, blankie, their teddy bear, something to make them feel safe.
I'm just another grandfather looking after his grandchild while his son is off at war.
These children of Hamas now will be the killer of my children.
I desperately wanted to talk about sex during my eulogy for Ido.
Everyone has to choose to be optimistic because we don't have room for pessimism.
Check out Israel Story wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. You mentioned the Russian attacks and using the same tactics. And there's been a lot of talk online that Iran actually didn't mean to hit Israel and that they sent some slow-moving drones that will be easily intercepted. But I wonder if really the difference here between the Ukraine forum and what happened here in Israel is the Arrow missile system. Would you agree that this is part of the big game changer here in terms of the success of the attack?
Yeah, first of all, I don't buy the fact that Iran wasn't trying to succeed. You don't fire 300 projectiles and, you know, in an unprecedented attack at a time when you look weak in order to not succeed. They were trying to hit the Nevatim air base for sure. That was the base from which the F-35s took off to take out the Iranian general on April 1st. So they were trying to hit that for sure. You don't try to fail publicly. Ukraine's air defenses are much weaker. They have the Patriot, but they've been asking since the beginning for multi-layered defense, and they've called for Iron Dome, which is kind of a code word for Israeli multi-layered defense. They really haven't gotten it. So there's no question that, yeah, the Arrow 3, which is able, you know, to take out ballistic missiles in space, is absolutely something that is a game changer there. But also the fact that you have Israeli pilots who are way ahead of other the skill and the experience of other pilots, and also the fact this was a regional effort. Also, there's no question contributed to it. If Israel was doing this alone, it probably would have looked somewhat different. Though Israel's capabilities and skill is certainly central to the success that we saw this week.
So the Iranian attacks succeeded in pushing the Republican Party to accelerate an aid bill for Israel. I believe the Arrow is actually manufactured in Israel, but obviously Israel needs to restock after Gaza. Do you see any kind of tide turning in the United States in terms of the aid bill?
Yeah, so that aid, this is one of the ways in which this attack was very good for Israel and very not good for Iran. This aid vote would have gotten just stuck in Congress over a Republican Party infighting over, you know, how much money should be spent abroad, certainly over the Ukraine thing. This hypercharged it. They decided immediately to move up the vote so that vote will happen within the coming days. And so it's not only that. So it helps with the Republican Party, first of all, but also with the Democrats, because the Democrats, who have been quite vocal about the need to support Ukraine and follow President Biden on that, this puts Israel and Ukraine in the same boat and reminds them that it's kind of the same fight against Iran and against Russia on both sides. This does very good things for Israel. If Israel's smart, they'll continue to leverage this. We saw that President Zelensky of Ukraine tweeted in support of Israel very quickly thereafter, something like, you know, if let's imagine Netanyahu doing a surprise visit to Kyiv, something like that, could continue to double down on that message and continue to move the narrative away from Israel doing terrible things to poor Palestinians to this is a Western fight against Iran, against its dangerous proxies, including Hamas and against Russia.
So Obviously, Israel really would like to retaliate. There are different grades of whether it's now or in the deep future. But it appears that the U.S. is telling Israel no one to hold them, no one to fold them. And this may be fold them time. What are you hearing from the U.S.?
Yes, so the U.S., the word of the day or of the last few months has been de-escalation. That's what they're most afraid of. Escalation, escalation, escalation. Everything that happens is, first of all, domestic politics. The Biden administration is looking for any way to get this fighting wrapped up so they can focus on other things, headlines about they'd like to talk about abortion. They'd like to talk about the economy. They don't want to be talking about Middle Eastern wars again when they've been trying for years to move away from the Middle East. They certainly don't need the Gaza fighting. They don't need a Rafah operation to happen in the summer when the conventions are happening, and then you'd have protesters, you know, going calling him Genocide Joe. Do not need any of that. But it's hard to move away from it, especially after this incident. They're trying to hint and tell Israel in every way, the damage was not done. You've already come out on top. Let's try to move beyond this. Be smart here. Now, Israel can be smart in many ways. And Israel, I think, feels it needs to retaliate. It can't just let this direct attack, the first direct attack from another country since 91, go unpunished. It would do terrible things to Israel's deterrence. But there's ways Israel can go about this in a much more intelligent fashion. I think the best response would be a strike at Iran's drone bases, drone factories. That would be a tit for tat. It would do a favor to countries like Saudi Arabia, who have been attacked by Iranian drones. It would also do good things for Ukraine, who is suffering from attacks from Iranian drones through Russia. And again, it would underscore the fact that this is kind of the same fight from the West that America should be behind. And Israel doesn't have to take responsibility for it. They can kind of be quiet about it like they were in the Deir ez-Zor attack in 2007, be smart about it, and not push Iran into another need to retaliate. But there's other options as well, whether it's striking oil facilities, things like that. Israel has a number of options. It doesn't have to be immediate, but I know that there are people in the government who want to see an immediate attack. Some were pushing for it before the missiles even reached Israel.
What you're describing in terms of the attack on the drone facility is Israel as a team player. And do you see that Israel will continue to really play a defensive position in this team right now instead of sparking World War III?
Well, I don't think that World War III is necessarily a very likely scenario. It's certainly not in Iran's interest. They're not trying to spark a war at all right now. That's why they have held off on something like this for a long time, even as they're getting battered on Israel's northern border. Israel, I think, will primarily operate in its own interest. It understands that this is a different reality than the pre-October 7th. But in general, Israel has shown itself willingness to do some very drastic operations when it feels like it should, even if some other countries, including the U.S., might not see it as especially comfortable. That includes the two strikes against nuclear facilities. Obviously, that nuclear issue is hovering over everything here. We haven't talked about it much since October 7th, but I'm sure in the minds of Iran's enemies in the region, it's okay, this attack could have been worse, but imagine if Iran was a nuclear power, how much worse it could have been, not even if they were going to use the nukes, but in terms of the limits, the options of what to do against them, it underlines the danger that Iran poses. So I think there's a lot of quiet support for Israel to do something. But again, these countries, certainly Saudi Arabia, is not looking for an escalation right now, but it would like Israel at some point to teach Iran a lesson. And it understands, as it did before, that Israel is really the country that is pushing back and actively fighting Iran in the region. And Israel has been the only country doing so for a long time.
Lazer, thank you so much for your insights today.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing. Please check out another installment tomorrow. This episode was produced by The Podwaves. If you have any questions or comments about this or any other episode, please drop us an email to podcast@timesofisrael.com. Until tomorrow, shalom.